You join me here on R&IB Connect Radio at Tate Modern on London's Bankside with Michael Raymond, who's one of the curators of the Philip Guston exhibition here at Tate Modern. Hello, Michael, and welcome to R&IB Connect Radio.
Hello. Hello, Toby. Nice to be here.
Michael, this is the sort of the first retrospective of Philip Guston's work for 20 years, which seems quite a long period of time. Why did Tate want to put on this retrospective at this particular time?
Well, it often in the curation and the making of these exhibitions, they often take a long time to put together. We're talking years. And I think the time had come, as you just said, it's been 20 years since the previous exhibition. And Guston is such an important and influential painter. You know, he's one of the, you know, he might not be someone that everyone's heard of, but really he is one of the most influential painters of the 20th century. And so, you know, we're really delighted to be showing Guston to audiences who have, like, the first time to really experience his work in almost a generation. He's someone who was painting alongside the likes of Mark Rothko and Jackson Pollock and Willem de Kooning. So, you know, he really is one of the greatest painters and artists, really, of the 20th century.
Yeah, because he's one of the most celebrated sort of, in a way, abstract artists, but he did go into all sorts of figurative and very cartoony kind of work as well. And his upbringing, I think, probably affected his life as well, because he moved from Canada to California and various things which were happening in the sort of 1920s and 30s. And I think, if I'm right, and I might be right here, but I think he sort of found his father hanging in the garden shed, which must have sort of had a real impact on his life.
Yeah, he had a very difficult childhood. So the family had, as you pointed out, they'd emigrated from what is present-day Ukraine. They were fleeing anti-Semitic persecution there. And they traveled to Montreal, which is where Guston was born. They then moved to Los Angeles. And as you point out, the family had quite a difficult time. You know, Guston's father was a rag and bone man, something that he, I think, really struggled with. And as you again point out, Guston's father took his own life when he was young, and his older brother was actually involved in a car accident which resulted in him dying sometime later from gangrene. So he had a very difficult and traumatic childhood, but despite that, Guston took comfort and refuge in art and in going to the library and reading magazines and books about European art. And so that's the direction that his life started to take in the 1920s, 1930s. And this was a time, you know, Guston's from a Jewish family, and they were immigrants into Los Angeles. And the Ku Klux Klan was really on the rise at this time. They had a huge membership in America, something like 2 to 5 million members. And Guston is growing up in this atmosphere, and him and his friends, under a group known as the Blocker Painters, they really wanted to make art that was protesting against the treatment of black people in America at the time. So from this very early point in his career, he wants to make art that is about social justice, you know, that is about improving the world in which we live in. And I think that that's another thing that visitors to this exhibition can take home.
And it's also very wide in sort of style when you think of some of them more sort of cartoony-like, and then you've got some which is very sort of monochrome in sort of just blacks and whites, and then you've got some figurative work in there. So although he's sort of celebrated as very much an abstract artist, there's a lot of variety there, isn't there?
Absolutely, yeah. So from this early period, he's making, well, he starts off as a muralist. You know, he's painting ginormous walls in these compositions that address various social issues like far-right extremism, or they're tackling it quite kind of socialist realist. So pictures of workers or forestry commission murals and this kind of thing. And then in the 1940s, he goes to painting these allegorical scenes of children. And what he's really affected by imagery that's coming back from World War II around the Holocaust. And we think that he saw an exhibition about the Holocaust in 1945. And he's really struggling with how do we depict the horrors that took place in the Second World War. And as he's doing this, he's painting these canvases of allegorical children, but they begin to become more and more abstract and darker and darker, until you get these canvases towards the end of the 1940s that are mostly black, but with red patches or grids and squares and that kind of thing. He then changes in the 1950s into this abstract style, and he becomes known as actually an abstract impressionist. That's how he's described at the time. It's not something that he necessarily agrees with, but he's painting these canvases that have this kind of shimmering quality to them, and they're often compared with Claude Monet's late water lily paintings. But it's a comparison that he rejected. And throughout the 1960s, he's making these abstract works which continually change before this hugely dramatic change in the mid to late 1960s, in which he abandons abstract expressionism altogether. And this is a time when he's one of the most successful abstract expressionist painters in the world. And he abandons that to go to painting in this completely unique, cartoonish style, these ginormous canvases that we're surrounded by as we speak, filled with strange, ambiguous imagery, piles of legs, fighting bin lids in the sky, horseshoes morphing into foreheads, which change into sunrises, all this very, very strange, surreal, dreamlike imagery.
And did that sort of come from his sort of thoughts on, I suppose, in a way, politics and what was happening in America at that time, or what was maybe happening around the world, the prosecution of immigrant people?
That's exactly right. So in the 1960s, when he's this successful abstract painter, he's making these canvases in the mid-60s, which are often, as I think you said, quite monochromatic. They were grey with these large head-like shapes of black paints that emerge from the centre, surrounded by grey or even just bare canvas around that. And then what happens is he's watching the news, like many of us, and he's seeing the war in Vietnam, he's seeing the civil rights movement, the assassination of Martin Luther King. He talks a lot about witnessing the Democratic Convention in 1968, which is when the police brutally attacked anti-war protesters in Chicago. And there's this famous quote that we include within the exhibition, which says something like, you know, the war, what was happening in America, what kind of man am I to witness all of this and go into a real frustrated fury about everything and then just go into my studio to adjust a red to a blue, you know? And you get this real sense that he's sick and tired of abstraction, and what he wants to do is make art which tells stories, which says something about the world and society around him. And what he hits upon is depictions of the Ku Klux Klan. So this is back in the 1930s, he depicted the Klan protesting against them. And so he kind of returns to this motif, this Klan-like motif, in the late 1960s. But he says, you know, I don't just want to do pictures of the Ku Klux Klan. I want to utilize this symbol of a white hood for evil, and use it as a symbol to address all kinds of evil everywhere in the world. And so he imagines this world that's filled full of Klansmen. They're driving around in cars, they're drinking, they're smoking, they're going to art exhibitions, they're doing all of the things that we do. And I think what he's really doing is asking questions about American society at the time, but society everywhere, and like, who is it who's committing these evil acts? You know, they can be amongst us, they can be anyone. You know, I could even be, you know, Gustin saying this to himself, it's like, even I could be complicit in the kinds of evil things in which society is sort of perpetrating. So really profound questions that he's asking.
Yeah, because I think the Ku Klux Klan sort of images, the hooded images, are ones that sort of stick in my mind. I'm not sure where I initially saw them, but they are very sort of prolific and very sort of, you know, sort of in a way they have a statement to make. But I wondered sort of if he was around now, when you think of the war in Ukraine, what's been happening in America, the climate crisis and everything else, would he be making statements like he was back in the sort of 60s and 70s?
I'm almost sure he would. Yeah, you know, I think, don't get me wrong, he was also, you know, he was first and foremost a painter, and particularly in his later life, he wasn't always trying to make political statements with his artwork. He was wanting to probe deeper, you know, about personal imagery or sort of the poetic nature of these sort of ambiguous symbols and imagery. But he certainly had a streak which was asking questions about the world around us, which you see most prominently in those Klan paintings of the early 70s and late 60s.
And it's, I know this is perhaps not a very wise question to ask, but are there any sort of maybe a couple of examples from this exhibition that in a way to you sum up his work?
Yeah, so we have these alphabet panels in the exhibition, or what's referred to as Gustin's alphabet. These are these small panels, and we have about 30 of them in the exhibition. And each of them depicts the kind of objects and symbols that he would go on to produce for the rest of his life. So they were made between kind of 1968 and 1973. And we hang them in the show like they were in Guston's studio. So they're in this kind of grid. But within them, yeah, you see, not just the objects and symbols that he would paint in his later life, but also those which he painted right at the beginning of his career in the 1930s and 40s. So you have light bulbs and bin lids and legs and feet and you know, Ku Klux Klan hoods and bricks and all of this kind of beautiful, kind of like luscious painterly imagery, which I think people love Guston for.
Well, the Philip Guston exhibition continues here at Tate Modern until the 25th of February 2024. And descriptive tours by trained Tate assistants can be booked for blind and partially sighted people for an audio describe tour. And you can do that by either emailing hello@tate.org.uk or by calling Tate on 020 7887 8888. Well, Michael, thank you very much indeed for joining me here on RNIB Connect Radio and telling me more and giving me a real insight into the Philip Guston exhibition here at Tate Modern.
Thank you, Toby.